our regular agenda. Item 7, administrative agency discussions regarding the post-retirement healthcare plan trust fund, more commonly known as OPEB.
Mr. Chairman, this is the result of a series of questions that were posed towards the district attorney during the budget conversation that we had at the workshop last Tuesday, specifically the GASB 45 accounting of the other post-employment benefits, which is what OPEB is. The OPEB liability for the county was calculated in 2009. That's the last time it was done. It was done by a presentation, was made by me to you all by the consultant. I think it may have been Supervisor Plass's third meeting or so.
Yes, paying attention.
I'm sure a lot was going on at that point in time. But the gist of what was said at that meeting, I will kind of paraphrase and try and do it real quick for you again. But we get liability coming to us from three locations, the other post-employment benefits liability. Specifically, there are retirees from the general unit that are eligible to participate in our health plan, and they are only allowed to participate in that plan if they have 5 years of service and retire directly from the county. They leave the county, go take employment somewhere else, and retire from there. They're not eligible to participate in our plan. But as a result, they get a lower rate than they would otherwise be eligible to get. That is called an implied benefit, and it has to be calculated and booked according to GASB 45. That accounts for about a third of our post-employment liability. The other two places we get liability are retirees from law enforcement who are eligible to enroll in PERS Health, and they get a stipend contributed by the county. It's an actual minimum amount, which is about $108, I think it was, a month. The third place is retirees from the deputy attorney's office, which same issue goes with them. But previous to the last employment agreement we had, they got a higher rate of the subsidy for their post-employment health care. And it was going up at a rapid rate. It was based on a different calculation. And because that was going up so fast, the OPEB calculation for the district attorney's office kind of went through the roof, and that they themselves were responsible for about a third of that total liability. And I think that's what brought that question up at the budget hearing last week, was what was the district attorney doing about that? The most recent contract...
Or what was the county doing?
What was it? Was
the county obligation.
Correct. And the most recent contract, they agreed to match what the sheriff's office units were doing as well. So they are now going to be receiving the minimum payment, which is not going up at that same rate that their other payment was being calculated at. So when we perform the next actuarial, I do believe it will be less than it was calculated back in 2009. But
so that would be 108 a month.
I think that's what the number is. I'm going off of memory, and I can't.
Would it equal 109, or would it be lower than 109, or is it going to be higher than 109?
Oh, it's going to be a little bit higher. The individual payment, I think it's going up a little bit, but it's not going up at the 30% a year rate that it was going up.
Okay. It goes up a minimum amount. I think when we were in negotiations with law enforcement this past time, it was that their contribution is about 112 now. So it went up from the 108 to the 112. It's in that range. So
their contribution in retirement towards their medical benefit.
Their ongoing post-retirement contribution from the county is that minimum amount.
And that will hold true for the sheriff's units as well as the district attorney unit.
That's what we're paying towards their retiree.
Yeah, that we pay towards.
We pay into all this, right?
That's what we pay towards them, only if they retire from the county.
The county.
Directly. If they don't retire from the county, this doesn't apply.
So,
but since
so we pay roughly $108 a month post-retirement.
Correct. Yes, sir.
And we do have that budgeted in our expenditures, or because we were necessitated or recommended in 2009 to pay $245,000 into that trust fund, and we have not been paying into it since. So the crux of my question was, are we creating a large unfunded liability that the county will have to deal with in the future, and are we prepared to deal with it?
There are two ways to handle the obligation, and that's what the actuarial compared the two options. One is the pay-as-you-go. Just we fund the 112 or whatever that number is when it's due. We fund it as it is due. That is the pay-as-you-go plan. And obviously, to pay something in the future costs more than it does to put the money away now and pay for it and save enough to pay for it in the future. The comparison between the two was what the actuarial did. The if we go with the pay-as-you-go plan, the liability as calculated by the actuarial is right at $5 million in present costs. So if you look at a present-day value of that obligation, it's estimated at $5 million. If we set aside at that 245 rate, it actually assumed a 1% of payroll set aside is where that 245 came from. If we do that, then the obligation is has a present value of $2.27 million. So there's a difference of about $2.7 million in value. Now there are some questionable assumptions there.
What was that number again? Is it $2.7 million?
$2.27 million is the present value of the pre-funded obligation. Now that assumes a 7.75% rate of return, which we've always
sounds like PERS math.
So if you assume it's going to be a lower rate of return than 7.75, the difference between the pay-as-you-go plan and the pre-funded plan actually becomes less, because this is the assumption is that if you're only going to get 5% or 4% on your return, then setting money aside right now isn't going to get you nearly as much as otherwise would. So that's the big difference. Now, the downside to not paying, not making these payments and having the OPEB obligation out there is that now, according to GASB 45, we have to book it as a liability. So if we want to go out to the bond market and issue bonds to build a building or do whatever else, or improve a road or whatever it is we want to do, we have to hit that bond market with this obligation showing on our books. And it is a $5 million obligation is what it would show. And which, in the big scheme of things, is not that large. Yes, sir?
You know, a question. Couldn't this number change? This is look at present employees. So if we had less employees, that number would probably drop. If you acquired more employees, that number would probably go up.
And yes,
and as health care costs go up, that number is going to go up too.
Right? No, because our obligation is capped. Well, the implied benefit, the costs for letting the miscellaneous unit access our health care would go up. That would go up. That's about a third of this. The other two, about a third of it comes from law enforcement, about a third of it comes from the DDAs.
How many people are we talking here?
You're talking everyone in those units.
And everyone that's retired.
That's why
that chooses to participate.
There are not that many. I think we've got one in the DDAs that's actually eligible right now. There aren't that many that have actually retired from it. It requires a lot of assumption to come up with the value of this OPEB benefit.
Does national health care come into play at any point in all this?
Not in this. When this actuarial was done, that was that was long. There was no idea that it was coming along. It was January of 2009, actually.
Supervisor Morelli.
Does this pertain to just the deputy district attorneys, or does it also pertain to the investigators?
Just everybody who's in the DDA unit, which is just the district deputy district attorneys. The investigators are in the law enforcement unit. So the actuarial separates them out for future. The next actuarial, they will be clumped into one. There's still going to be some liability for the existing employees who will fall under the old rule, but the new employees will fall under the new rule.
Chuck,
you said if we go out to debt financing, that $5 million isn't really a big deal in the whole scheme of things, but I mean, with our budget, I think it is a big deal. A huge proportion of our budget.
Well, we won't have to pay it out in one.
I realize that, but I think when financiers look at it, they're going to look at it as a bigger deal than if you had a $200 million budget.
Does it largely just affect the interest rate that you've got to promise to pay on the bond sales?
That's where your rating would be hurt, and that's how it would be reflected.
Supervisor Boitano.
I think I got this figured out. So the DA investigators fall under law enforcement at the lower tier that they're at now.
Correct.
It wouldn't be, yeah. Well, my personal feeling on this, I think we should pay as we go and have that liability covered. And the reason I say that is...
Well, that's what C.L. Wiley and I talked about, and I think his... In our conversation, his feeling was in the short term now, and we're talking short term in years, with our budget the way it is and as tight as it is and with the economy the way it is, we can probably float for a couple years and bide our time until our revenues start coming back and then restart up paying into the program.
I would agree with that statement as far as what you said, Mr. Chairman. But I think, too, it's not just a matter of revenues coming back. It's also as we work to streamline operations, that will help basically help the bottom line. Because revenues are probably going to come back, but I don't think in a great big rush.
Well, if I could have finished what I was going to say, all the money that Kirkpatrick buried up at the other building was a result of PERS actual aerial. And they wouldn't charge us for a number of years. We wanted to put that money in. Regardless, they wouldn't do it. And so, lo and behold, we built this, we built that. The money's gone. If the money would have went into PERS, we wouldn't have any indebtedness to PERS. That's the bottom line. The real money that we always had on the books came from our PERS savings.
I don't think we have the excess revenue right now, but I think we better be prudent when times start to get a little better. We start getting a little more of the property tax revenue back up. We better routinely funding the obligation.
I would say you're exactly right.
I would, and that was the crux of my question initially during budget discussions last week, was where are we, what are we looking at in the way of an unfunded liability? Does our current balance in that OPEB account basically represent a cushion for us to develop a plan from that point forward once that money starts getting drawn down by our retirees and so forth? It's just looking forward and being prepared for what we've committed to.
You know, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I concur with everything that's being said here today with the board on this item, but I think that when we have people come to us and ask us for better benefits or better pay raises or a COLA, we should keep this in the back of our mind because we have to make up this somewhere along the line. And we have to keep this and tell these people, even though I agree that everybody nowadays needs to get some kind of a COLA or pay raise, but we can't afford to do it until we take care of some of these things that we have in our back closet that we got to take care of. because otherwise this is going to come back to hurt the whole county.
Question is, all this is a result of a law that was passed that these people have to be given this benefit in post-retirement?
No,
it was negotiated.
The issue is actually with the change in the accounting standard. The GASB, GASB, is the Government Accounting Standards Board. And Rule 45 is that this liability has to be tracked and booked if you're not. And when I say booked, I mean shown on your ledger as a liability, in order to properly reflect what your ongoing obligations are. So,
but my question is, this is a result of a negotiated benefit.
No, it's not a requirement for the benefit's not a requirement.
PERS requires the contribution for the people in their plan, and so
since we've gone
since law enforcement's in their plan, it's a requirement of PERS.
That's
what I want to know.
You know, one thing I would like to say.
I thought you were Joe Lowe for a minute there.
One thing I would like to say too is, I mean, this is something we could kick this can down the road and not pay it. And probably life would be really probably a little more fun. We'd have more fun money, and we could do more things. But the county is in generally a pretty good financial position right now. And I think one thing we need to look at when you thank the supervisors and basically the county staff that came before us, that were, I don't know if I'd say frugal with their money, but they're very conservative. They paid their bills. They took care of business. And they left the county in pretty good shape. And I think if we take the same tact, and if we pay our bills and we watch our dollars down the road, I think the people, the successors after us, whether it's supervisors, the staff, or even the residents who we serve, I think they'll say, hey, you know, those guys did a good job and they left us in good shape. And if we go in there and if we take a different tact and go in there and say, hey, we got money, we're going to put that obligation off down the road, we're not going to pay it. Down the road, those people, they'll be cussing our names, and rightfully so if we did that, which I don't think we tend to do. But that's just the way I see it.
You might be here, but I won't.
The other thing, Chuck, if we're going to delay this, I mean, we do need to keep this in mind, that this is money that needs to be repaid in the future into these accounts to fulfill the obligation when we go into future negotiations. So before we start negotiating and giving things a lot higher, we better remember this obligation, because it's going to be, this obligation takes precedence in the future over us spending money in other places.
I agree.
Would it behoove us, even though we, to at least put something in?
Right.
You know, sooner than later, even if it's not the full amount or whatever, just to get something down in there.
We're essentially building a trust fund that is designed to get to a level where the return on that fund is self-funding of the obligation.
Right.
Exactly. Yes, sir.
I mean,
so... by not funding it right now, we postpone the time at which it becomes self-sustaining.
Yeah,
I think with this coming on our plate, although I'm sure we knew about it, but prior to our next fiscal year and prior to things going forward, this board should come up with some kind of a fee, or maybe with the CAL's help, to figure out what we want to set aside for this coming up year, this present coming up year that we're talking about of 2014, so we know, the board knows, how much money we need to set aside for this, or how much we've agreed to set aside for this, so then when negotiations and everything comes before us, we have that number in our mind that we have to remember.
Well, essentially, that's what we're doing today, though. We're setting that at zero to put in for the next budget year.
But we're already behind how many years?
Two years.
The first payment was made in December of 10. December of 11 and December 12, we did not make the payment, and I don't have it included in next year's budget. So December 13 would be the third year that we...
I mean, we could move the discretionary fund back to $1,000.
Well, I don't, you won't even put it in it, but I'm thinking that, I mean, I know we depend on our stuff that we roll over every year to carry us through at the end of the budget year, or carry forward, but I think it would be prudent if we could at least put something.
I think that'd be a good idea.
Even if it was only $50,000 or whatever.
The sooner you start, the sooner you get there.
That $50,000 would be coming out of the contingency then, correct?
Well, whatever we have, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the next 5 or 6 months?
Yeah,
you know,
we could wait until...
I mean, I wouldn't do anything until we get down to the final budget and see how we stand.
Yeah, Chuck's trying to plan for that, though.
I know. Put something in there. Doesn't mean we have to do it when we get down to it.
I think Supervisor Boitano is saying that maybe the carryover comes in a little higher than anticipated or something like that. We redirect.
I saw just a minute ago on my clipping service that our projected state budget is ahead more than they expected. I don't know what kind of fuzzy math they had.
They got a bridge you can buy too.
For the sake of time, then we're going to hold this item over until we. Get to the end of our budget discussion and pass the final budget. We'll make a decision prior to that time.
Mr. Chairman, I think Chairman Boitano or Supervisor Boitano's suggestion might be something, as reiterated by Chuck, and as maybe we adopt a policy that says if our contingency going at the end of next year is greater than what we've budgeted for that, then we adopt a policy that says any excess contingency revenues get rolled into an OPEB.
I don't mind that to a certain degree. I don't know if I'd make that a hard and fast.
Well, it's either budget it or adopt a policy that allows for some excess to go.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
I don't think we need a policy. I think if our revenues increase, I mean, if this year, if the sales tax had gone up that extra 0.5% or 1%, we would have that revenue to put into this obligation. We might want to put in double the amount into the obligation to bring it back in the future. I don't want to tie us to any set amount going in there, but I'd rather get it repaid quicker. I mean, I try to take most of my personal loans and get them paid off quicker rather than let them float out there forever and pay the bank.
Speaking of which, you owe me $50. So,
at this point, I mean, we can't wait until June because you're going to come back with a final budget for passage. So.
Well, this will be what you'll get in June will be the preliminary budget.
Right.
And then we can address that before final. When we get the actual hard numbers.
We're looking final budget around August.
Yes, sir.
All right.
I think I understand what Supervisor Plaza is talking about. I understand that. And I think it's probably a good idea if you had something that basically memorializes this is what we're looking at. And the only problem is, the reason why I'm kind of going, I don't know about that. If we have, say we have a fire somewhere and need to put it out, I guess we could still countermand that directive.
Again, it's excessive of anticipated contingency.
Right. It would be funds that were not anticipated in the preliminary budget, that the carryover came in higher than anticipated or some other thing came in higher than anticipated.
Actually, you know, that may be a good idea because it lays out the need for it and the reason why ahead of time.
Well, and it's not putting an additional burden on the budget, but it recognizes that if we achieved some budget savings through the course of the year, through whatever streamlining or whatever other things came up, it sort of earmarks
priority.
It encumbers any of those excess funds for this purpose.
You almost have to look at it budget by budget, though, because that money that you're going to take and routinely fund, if you set a policy, that might be the money you use to balance your budget the next year.
I understand that.
He's saying this would be in excess of.
If you end up retaining the same level of carry forward year after year, then excess carry forward can go.
And I'm not actually predicting that that's going to happen this year. So, I do understand. I think what the board wants, and we can leave it with that direction to me. rather than making a hard policy.
Yeah, I'm fine without being a policy, but maybe just direction for this year, maybe say for the fiscal year 13-14.
Yep. Let's get a placeholder in the budget. We'll see how everything pans out, and we'll go from there. But
I agree.
Placeholder in the budget, then it'll always draw attention.
That's a good idea.
That's a good idea.
All right, direction clear, Mr. Eiley? All right, let's move on to our addendum. I'm going to try to make this quick. I won't be done by noon, but I'll try to make it quick.
Time's up.
Just a couple items very quickly. The Secure Rural Schools sequestration, RCRC, CSAC, the other organizations are still working on that issue. As was said in Yosemite, though, at our last conference, the last meeting, the park superintendent there and several of the other people with the Park Service said we understand sequestrations very well. So they've been hit by that over the last couple of decades pretty hard. There's an issue on the possessory interest taxes on lands, and this will be in a supplemental packet that I'll leave upstairs, but basically this involves Indian lands that have leases to public entities, public businesses that pay possessory taxes that have been collected by the tax assessors, by the assessors and the tax collector. There was a ruling that came out of the Bureau of Indian Affairs that they would no longer be required to pay those possessory interest taxes on Indian lands. So a county like Butte County, I think Bob Williams said that amounts to about $5 million in taxes that they would lose overnight. So that'll have to be one that we watch in the future. I don't think there's anything for us directly to watch out there for, but it could be in the future.
How is that broken out, Richard? Possessory interest in the land or personal property?
No, for the businesses that operate on Indian lands.
Oh, okay.
They're paying taxes. And the BIA's came out with that ruling now. The specifically in Riverside County, the Desert Water Agency has filed suit in federal court against the BIA, against that ruling. So the suit goes on to claim that should the court find that the rule does apply to those types of assessments, that the rule should be declared invalid as illegal. So anyway, it affects counties across the state, some of those being RCRC counties.
They're opposed, obviously.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's an individual county issue right now, so RCRC is just watching this and seeing which direction it's going to go. Those AB 97 Medi-Cal reimbursement rate cuts that would affect small hospitals, I reported on last time. There's three pieces of legislation that RCRC is supporting that would repeal those AB 97 Medi-Cal reimbursement rate cuts. So that's an ongoing issue. The Assembly Bill 468 on the repeal of the SRA fees, that was by Chesbro, that would have put a fee on insurance policies across the state for emergency action, emergency incidents. Chesbro has pulled that bill. The scuttlebutt is that he is getting a lot of disagreement with him by the insurance industry. So they are the main ones opposing that.
Those campaigns.
RCRC is discussing this with Chesbro, but they don't know which way this is going to go right now. Paul Smith feels that they do have enough legislators convinced that they need an overall statewide solution. In fact, CAL FIRE is pushing for an overall statewide solution to that situation because between the governor, I don't know about the governor, but the legislature, CAL FIRE, the Board of Equalization realized this is giving everyone a black eye over a very small amount of money. So they're looking for a statewide solution. They also indicated RCRC between Assemblyman Bigelow, Assemblyman Daly, and Assemblyman Chesbro, they are really convincing the other legislators that they need an overall statewide solution. Whether that's going to happen remains to be seen. There was an issue in Department of Fish and Wildlife payment in lieu of taxes, and this is for property that Fish and Wildlife has put into conservation easements and has not been paying their in lieu taxes that they agreed to. You can read about this in the book upstairs, but it does not affect our county at this point. And there's I'll talk to CAO Wiley about the Department of Water Resources draft California's flood future. It's a lot of information here. RCRC is asking for county comments on this. I'm not sure if our county, being that we do have some floodplain areas in our county, mostly Ione area, we're not going to be greatly affected as some other counties are going to be. Lastly, legislation. I'm not going to ask you for a position on any legislation today. I am going to leave the supplemental packet that I brought home upstairs. RCRC has taken positions on a lot of legislation, a lot of nonsense in the legislature. There are some good bills that they have taken positions on. Supervisor Novelli, you'd be interested in some of the veterans issues. I know one would exempt veterans from paying any fees going into state parks on Memorial Day and Veterans Day, and another would allow Purple Heart recipients to get into parks free across the state of California. Supervisor Dickin, or former Supervisor Dickinson, now Legislator Dickinson, has some ridiculous pieces of legislation, one on CEQA and a couple of others that RCRC is taking opposed positions on, but he has, it seems like he's quickly forgotten his roots about what county government is and city government. There's a lot of CEQA reform legislation going on now. Most of it is very bad. It's the exact opposite of what we thought CEQA reform was going to be. It's going the opposite direction. Senator Dickinson has a bill that would actually create some kind of special CEQA court that RCRC has taken an opposed position on. It's just ridiculous.
I think they should have a CEQA experiment and should put grizzly bears back in a particular building in the middle of Sacramento and see what happens.
Yeah, well, I think when most people proposed CEQA reform, they didn't expect this nonsense to be coming out of Sacramento. There's multiple bills in here that RCRC has opposed on some of the CEQA changes they want to make. One of them would require that all CEQA documents, and I think it's general plan, CEQA documents have to be printed in Spanish if the majority of the district speaks Spanish. So just RCRC is opposing it just on the costs. A couple of the others, there's a lot of state responsibility area legislation that RCRC mostly is taking support positions on.
Anything that removes habitable structures from having to pay the fee when they're in a federal responsibility area and not a state?
Yeah, have to look at the legislation. There's Williamson Act. At the end of the supplemental packet, there's Williamson Act documentation and letters from RCRC and CSEC asking for legislature to engage on putting the Williamson Act back in place and fully funding. You know, most of this is pretty important legislation and the positions that are being taken, especially the opposed, but RCRC has already sent letters, and I'm just going to let you read through all of it. It's with so many pieces of legislation coming out of Sacramento and so many bad pieces of legislation. One of them by Assembly Leader Perez that RCRC is opposing. This one came up last year that would expand the timeline for death benefit claims for firefighters and peace officers. So it's back. No surprise that former union representative Perez is bringing this back. But this is this would take things like cancer and other things that people might normally get in their lifetime
and attribute it all to their to the work environment. So it was bad last year. It's going to be bad this year. Yeah, it's cancer. You can take any ailment, and you would say that's from when you were employed. And it's just
wow.
A bad piece of legislation.
What if you were never employed?
Well, that would
that's that legislation is supervisor replied that legislation is coming. I'm sure.
No. I think that legislation would probably cover that. You were because you were never employed. That was your health issue, so yeah. You should be compensated.
Anyway, with that, I think I'm just going to stop. You should read this legislation by Assembly Member Dickinson, though. It's all very bad what he is supporting. There is legislation by Assembly Member Gordon that RCRC is supporting that would require the general fund monies be allocated for the purpose of providing grants to local governments for the implementation of greenhouse gas reduction projects. So,
does anybody keeping track of the voting records of some of these former county supervisors once they get on the Assembly and Senate?
You can look at the bills, and
I mean,
you can see the legislators that were former supervisors who are sponsoring bad pieces of legislation. At least Assemblymember Gordon is trying to go middle of the road. Sometimes other than the mountain lion bill where he sure went the wrong direction on us.
Yeah, he's gone the wrong direction a couple of ways.
Yeah. That's not good. Supervisor Novelli, did you have anything?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, being that you're the representative on RCRC, I think that it'd only be fair that you notify RCRC and inform them that Supervisor Novelli a couple of weeks ago was voted in to the California State Fire District Association Board. I'm a member at large representing District 3, so if they'd like me to take care of any fire issues that they might have, please tell them to contact me. Thank you, sir.
Okay, I'll talk to you offline about that and get all the information down.
Thank you. I'd like to say thank you to this board for supporting me and our local fire entities for supporting me. I was kind of sweating it there for a while.
All right, thank you. I think. You can also see Senator Evans, who helped us so much on the issue of the basic aid. She's got some bad piece of legislation in here, too. So with that, any discussion or any more comments on this meeting?
Thanks for the good news.
Yeah. Hearing none, we will go back into closed session now, at least four of us, and the regular portion of this meeting is adjourned.